The Law of the Sea Treaty is very clear, based on the 58 conventions before that, that every nation in the world has the authority to go out and to grab pirates in areas beyond the territorial sea of any nation. That is, in areas that are traditionally regarded as high seas areas. There's no ambiguity about that. The only two restrictions in the Law of the Sea that go all the way back to the 1950s and customary international law before that is you have no right to grab a pirate in somebody else's territorial sea, and that is without their permission, at least, of the coastal state. And piracy under the traditional Law of the Sea does not pick up terrorism. It's the kinds of things that are done for profit. So, for example, the Somalia ransom piracy, it just fits perfectly. It's just like a glove. The SUA Convention, which is one of the United Nations anti-terrorism conventions that is aimed at the setting after the Achille Lauro terrorist takeover of a liner some years ago, basically even fills in the whole of those two problems, so that you can even apply the standards, the criminal standards of that convention, even if the piracy happened to take place in the territorial sea. And it, of course, being an anti-terrorism convention, is broader than the typical concept of piracy. It includes political actions, actions taken for political as opposed to private property. Now, the United Nations began to address this fairly late. The General Assembly had earlier passed a few resolutions dealing with this, but it was really not until 2008, following the expansion of the Somalia activities in the kidnap ransom industry growing up there, that you began to have serious action and focus on this in the Security Council. And the most important of those resolutions are resolutions that, with the permission of the Somalia government, insofar as there is a functioning government, permit states actually to go into the territorial sea, even in grabbing these pirates and taking actions. Indeed, under the resolutions, you could even go into the land territory of Somalia to try to pick up the pirates, as France, in fact, has done on one occasion. And finally, classically under international law, under the notion of jurisdiction, piracy is the particular starting point in universal jurisdiction. Every nation in the world has the jurisdiction in their own courts to try pirates, regardless of whether it's a piracy aimed at their nationals or whether it takes place in one of their ships or in their territorial sea. Now, let me just set aside one of the myths here that is out there that I think is completely false. And that is that somehow the Law of the Sea Convention of 1982 inhibits our ability to go after pirates. Well, it's just the opposite. There's probably no clearer area in international law where you have the ability of universal jurisdiction, et cetera, to pick up pirates than you do in dealing with the Law of the Sea Treaty. Now, what are some of the principal counter-piracy options if we try to deal with this? One is enhanced policing and enforcement within national jurisdiction. And we see this, again, a very good example being Indonesia, Malaysia, and Singapore getting together to effectively police the Singapore-Malacca Strait some years ago. Very effective, and it shows you what can be done. The second is enhanced policing and enforcement within undergoverned areas. Well, Somalia is a classic undergoverned area, an area really without any effective functioning governance. And that's going to be extremely difficult. How do you operate in those areas? There is no government really to effectively police and enforce. And there is a temptation to look at the problem of piracy and say, well, you know, the real problem is poverty in Somalia and an absence of government. We really need to solve that, and that would solve this problem. And largely it would. It's just that it's kind of like saying, you know, we can solve the problem of aircraft accidents simply by repealing the law of gravity. And you know, it's kind of hard to do. And sure, we need to work on Somalia and deal with that problem. The United Nations and others have been trying to do that for many years. But to say, well, wait a minute, we've got to wait until we solve the problem of Somalia is, I think, not the appropriate way to try to deal with this issue. The third is prevention and interdiction efforts at sea and on land, but primarily at sea. And here we have a massive deployment of warships from all over the world into the area. The problem with this is it's a gigantic area. And the pirates are pretty smart as well. They've got a variety of different devices to see where they are and to see where the other ships are. And so it's very, very hard to be too effective in that. It has had an effect. If you look at 2009 over 2008, probably the effect has been to reduce the effective takeover of the ships from attempts from about 40% of all the attempts working in 2008 down to about 23% in 2009. But you can see that, you know, you're slowing down, what, a third of the successful attacks or so by having this massive and expensive warship deployments of nations from all over the world in the area. You can also have criminal prosecution. That, after all, is the core thing we talk about in international law of the SUA Convention and of universal jurisdiction and law of the sea treaty. The problem with that is basically what you're doing is prosecuting lower level, the equivalent of drug mules in the drug business. You can in Somalia, as the warlords running this kind of operation and the moneyed interests running this, recruit any number of young teenagers to go out and say, you know, get in the boat, here it is, here's a nice long ladder, and go out there and all you have to do is find a slow-moving ship and put the ladder. By the way, it's amazing. Regular ladders that you go down buy at the store, it's not some grappling hook or something else sophisticated. It's a long thing that looks a little bit like a rowboat with a couple of powerful motors on it and carrying just frequently just a plain old ladder that you'd buy at Walmart that could go up to the side of the ship as they get on board the ship with their weapons. So the criminal prosecution, yes, you should prosecute. It's very important. You want to be consistent in that. We are trying the one we hold right now in the Southern District of New York. U.S. national law is very clear on it. But you're really not going to solve the problem. There's just infinite number of new people that can just pour out there, and as long as, you know, one in five are going to get that $1 million payout, they're going to be doing this. Civil liability, you can try to track their funds just like you do with drug gangs, et cetera, and money laundering, and try to track it around the world. It is something we need to do, but very hard to do. They're very sophisticated in how they get the payouts and how they do it. I would suggest that focused efforts to reduce the incentives for piracy are really your most effective payout. Now, one way to think about this is the importance of not overlooking the obvious. There is a classic story that is Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson, who are one evening out camping in their tent under the stars. And in the middle of the night, Watson gets nudged by Sherlock Holmes and says, Watson, wake up. Look at all those stars up there. What do you deduce? And a sleepy Watson says, well, there are millions of stars up there. You know, surely there must be thousands of planets, and maybe some of those are inhabited. And Holmes says, Watson, you idiot, someone stole our tent. Well, I think it's very important not to overlook the obvious. And the obvious is this is a kidnap ransom industry that continues because people pay the ransom. And so how are we going basically to a little more effectively deal with this? And I would suggest to you two things that should be done through the Security Council. I'm delighted, by the way, to have 10 years ago in a meeting our Ocean Center sponsored with the International Maritime Organization in London, been the first one to urge that the piracy issue be taken to the Security Council. And we should have done it 10 years ago, instead of starting just with the level of activity, excuse me, in the Somalia kidnap industry. The first of those is, I think, a very simple Security Council resolution banning the payments of ransom to pirates. Now, will that be 100% effective? No. It's going to be difficult to enforce. We need to set up a Security Council committee, as we have done in terrorism also, to look at the enforcement of that. But is it going to make a difference? Yes, it will make a huge difference. It will stop 90% of all the payouts to the pirates and is going to remove the incentive very, very dramatically in lessening it. The second is, I would suggest, again, a Security Council action inviting establishment of multiple small counter-piracy naval teams. This would be a resolution that would invite, let's say, all the major powers and perhaps major maritime powers and others beyond that to each come up with some teams, let's say 10, 15 teams each, that would be 3 to 5 individuals that are military, trained in the kinds of operations you'd want to prevent the pirates from boarding the ships. They would then be randomly put on board the ships as they go into the threatened area and taken off the ships when they go through the area the other way. I do not believe that it is the job of private industry to put security on the ships. They are not going to do it for a variety of reasons, and if you want the security, it can't be just trying to get warships, because the warships come in after the ship is taken over, and unless you're going to have a hostage rescue and people get killed, that's after the fact. You want to stop the piracy in the first place, prevent them from getting on board the ship. You don't need Navy SEAL teams that are that well trained. These are really just reasonably well trained military forces, 3 to 5 man teams with the proper night goggles and a few other things. You've got the high ground. It's the easiest thing in the world to permit a small little poorly armed pirate ship from trying to take over your ship at that point. Then I think we need to encourage all the nations to prosecute pirates under national law pursuant to that universal jurisdiction. One of the scandals in the current setting is a number of nations early on were simply releasing the pirates. Even the French that were taking a proactive effort in going in on this and grabbing some of the pirates would, the first time at least, were releasing the pirates at that point. Well, you don't want to do that, nor do you need to have them all turned over to countries in the region, and that's not the way to do it either. We were afraid it was going to cost too much to do this. Countries were worried about bringing them back. There's an obligation to try the pirates and to have some world order in relation to this. Then I think we might consider Security Council designation of certain high-risk areas as special areas where mere possession of certain identified pirate equipment. And what would that be? Well, you got one of those big ladders in the boat. It's a no-brainer. You don't use that for fishing. The last time I saw you didn't climb down the ladder into the depths to try to catch fish. So there are a few other kinds of things you can do, maybe certain kinds of outboard motors that you have, etc., that makes it a little bit easier to grab and prosecute some of these people. Now, I think you do want to try some other things. I don't think they're the core of it. You try to go after the assets of the criminal piracy gangs. In exceptional settings, you might be able to have certain military responses on land. We've seen that already in one case from the French, but most of the time your intel is not that good and it doesn't work that well. You're back into a Black Hawk Down setting, as we saw earlier in Somalia. Enhanced information flow to local communities to try to get them turned off against the pirates by pointing out the cost to their community of aid and a variety of other things from the piracy. And enhanced anti-piracy training for navies around the world. And certainly more effective regional action. And of course, a variety of very common sense provisions that we would like the merchant marine itself to systematically and always apply in these dangerous areas. It simply means you go faster. And by the way, if you go fast enough, the pirates cannot board the ship. Secondly is removing, for example, the The ladders that are designed for the pilots to come on board the ships, a lot of these ships have fixed ladders on the side that you don't need to have a ladder in your boat. You just go grab it and climb up the ship. Well, those should be removed, and you should take evasive action. And when the ships do that, it's actually quite difficult for the pirates to get on board. They need calm weather. They need slow ships. And if you move around fairly quickly, it's very difficult for them with their typical technology to get on board these ships. They're not using helicopters or anything sophisticated. Now, what are the objections to all of this? Right now, I'm sad to say that in general, the way governments are responding is this is kind of business as usual. Look, this is small time, small in relation to the overall shipping industry, just the way we viewed it in the 15th to 18th centuries. Comparatively few crew members are killed or injured. And by the way, if you happen to be one of those, you know, families of those 700 taken hostage that are also go through a horrendous set of shocks and problems, I think you wouldn't be supporting that. There's a very different view here by the mariners' unions from that of the shipping companies on that. And I think we do have an obligation to obtain release of crew members and ships, but do you have that obligation to pay ransom? And the industry argues, yes, that's we'll just pay the ransom. It's simple, cost $1 million a ship, and you know, maybe if we're unlucky, we'll have two ships taken next year. It's peanuts compared to the cost of the industry. It's not even driving the insurance rates up all that much. Okay, what are some of the answers to that? Payment of ransom is the core incentive driving ransom payments. Curtailing payments will dramatically reduce the kidnap ransom piracy issue. Now, let me also suggest to you that I think it is immoral to be paying to criminal groups money that, yes, you're saying I'm getting my people back, but you have every reason to believe now you're basically encouraging them to go grab somebody else. So I think you've got a very serious moral problem in doing that. And even from the standpoint of your own crew members, it is a very poor long-term policy to be paying ransom. Because when you do that, you're really setting up your next ship going through there to be grabbed for the incentive of paying $1 million ransom. So we have adopted in relation to government officials in the United States our official view. And as a former U.S. ambassador, I certainly supported that as something that reduced the risk that I was going to be grabbed by some kind of pirate groups or some kind of kidnapping groups. Sadly, industry frequently does pay off, and it's one of the reasons you have the kidnap industry in places like Mexico and Colombia today. And I think it should be checked out. Excuse me, my throat seems to be acting up today here on it, so take a sip here. Now, I think also there is a rule of law component here. Do we really, the organized international community in the 21st century, want to have an out-of-control piracy kidnap industry, even if it's small time? The implications for law and for saying law and minimum order really aren't important, I think, is very serious. There's a spillover effect when you say we don't care about law. And so I think the rule of law really is a fundamental reason for it here. Another one, it seems to me, is the importance of this is an opportunity. Look at the opportunity cost. Rarely do we have settings in which the international community, all the major powers, are prepared to work effectively in the Security Council to do something. This is one thing that brings them together. Why not have an example of, okay, let's make it really effective Security Council action and show you what we can do? And I would suggest resolutions in those two areas would be critical in doing that. I guess that last point I'd like to make, simply outrageous in the 21st century for nations to accept piracy as they did in earlier ages. Now, let me also give you some possible objections to the establishment of these international counter-piracy naval teams that would be put forward under Security Council authorization. One is the problem of foreign naval teams on non-national flagships. Flag of Turkey and is that a setting in which we are going to permit a team from Russia, for example, to be on board the ship? Or the problem of varying rules of engagement. You've got now 30 different countries that are putting forth these various groups. They're going to have all kinds of different rules of engagement. What are the rules of engagement? When do you shoot? Under what circumstances, etc.? And then the problem of civil liability, the potential of these teams being sued, etc., and having a problem or the ships being sued in those settings. Now, I would suggest to you that there's some good options in response to that. Every country should have the option of using its own naval teams for its own flagships. The Security Council should establish uniform rules of engagement that all the various groups are trained in. And the Security Council should establish non-liability for actions of naval teams that are following the rules of engagement. And I think there really are easy answers to that that you can build into your Security Council action, though these are some of the objections specifically that I've been hearing. Now, in concluding and then opening it up to some questions here, let me just say that this is, for me, a very, very serious issue in world order. Yes, it is fairly de minimis in terms of the cost of global shipping. Yes, even if you compare, you know, the number of people that are taken hostage or killed compared to, you know, major wars like Iraq or Afghanistan, it's not in that league. Yes, it's not the traditional thing naval forces do, but I think this should be taken very seriously by governments, and we need to take effective action to stop it and stop it promptly. And in my judgment, two very simple Security Council resolutions could do that. The first is simply the banning of all payments to ransom groups, along with the setting up of a little UN enforcement committee that's going to be talking to governments about what are they doing to have criminal standards for anyone who's one of their nationals to pay these ransom payments to the pirate groups. And the second are this effort to cooperate with forces around the world to create these small little anti-piracy teams that don't cost much and can be put on board the ships, etc. Maybe they get put on board at the last port of call and get removed at the next one. There are going to be some issues about how you get them on board the ships and how you get them off, and that's going to be another set of things that have to be thought about very carefully. But I don't think it should be left to private security or Blackwater type teams in fielding ships. Fielding other ships doesn't do it. You've got to stop that ship from being taken. That means that some kind of small security team that's well trained has appropriate rules of engagement to do it. Thank you. Let me just open it up at this point for any discussion, any thoughts that you have.